Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Coming off another victory. Of course, we all saw this coming. And that is the Mickey Callaway Report. It's served to you by Casamigos Tequila. Try Añejo Tequila straight up. It's aged 14 months in bourbon barrels and is just incredibly creamy and delicious. I've only ripped this guy a couple of times this season.
Only a couple?
But now, all is good in the world of the New York Mets, and that's the manager of the team, Mickey Callaway. Mickey, Evan, JJ, how are you?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Did you envision this as the miracle? When you said, we need a miracle to turn this thing around, is this exactly what you had in mind, what we've seen from this team over the last few weeks?
Yeah, this is what it had to be, right? I mean, for us to get to this point, we had to do what we did, and I'm really proud of the guys. You know, they've been unwavering in their enthusiasm and the way they come to play every day. Our confidence is at an all-time high right now for good reason, and it seems to be clicking on all cylinders on the field. So I'm really proud of these guys. They never gave up. They would have been easy to throw in the towel at times during this season, but they've done a great job of sticking it out and grinding it out.
Mickey kept such a positive approach. Even that series in San Francisco, you had so many brutal losses, that 16-inning game, couple walk-offs mixed in, but yet you told members of the media, we are close. Now you look, you're playing wonderful, wonderful baseball. So I'm curious, what did you see in that San Francisco series that kind of led you to believe you as a baseball team were close?
Well, you know what? They were playing great baseball, and those games can go either way. When you play an extra inning game, you know, it's not always the best team that day that wins, because anything can happen. Right. And some things did happen to us, right? We drop a ball and they win a game, but, we were playing good baseball at that point, probably just as well as we are now. And, we just didn't come out on the winning side of things because they're extra inning games and those can go anyway. So I felt like we were close. We were playing good baseball and, it kind of has shown up this, last week and a half.
I don't think we've gotten a chance to see it yet because the doubleheader created a circumstance. Seth Lugo pitched two innings. Friday night, it's a one-run game. Are you going to decide how to use Edwin Diaz and Seth Lugo based on matchups, based on who's coming up, or are we going to have the specific roles of Lugo's the eighth-inning guy, Diaz is the ninth-inning guy? Where are we with the usage of these two guys in close games?
We have to feel the situation out, right? First of all, you know, when I think about our bullpen, we have to get to the ninth inning. You know, I think at this point we'd all agree that Seth Lugo is our best reliever.
No question.
So if we have to use him in a high leverage situation to even have a ninth inning, Lugo's going to pitch in that situation. And then we'll figure it out from there. So, I think we just have to go based on the situation, matchups, like you said, and, you know, I think that's the formula for wins for us right now. I do have faith in Diaz. He's been throwing the ball better. Obviously, we have faith in Lugo, Gesellman. They've been throwing the ball great. Familia's throwing the ball better, and Wilson has been off the charts. So he's added a whole nother dynamic to the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning that allows us to be a little more creative. And I think we just always have to think about that. Be creative late in the game and use our best personnel when we can.
All right. Now, with that said, this is what frustrated me about a decision you made, and you could tell me where I'm wrong here. It's a one-run game. Seth Lugo's your best reliever. You just said it. You're right. Mm-hmm. It's not even a question. In a one-run game, you don't want to use your best reliever. It has to be a tie game. What's that line of, hey, I got to keep this thing close? Because that was the situation on Friday night. So how do you make that decision? Will you start to use Lugo in a one-run game? Because you've got confidence, hey, if I could keep it at one run, this offense can come back and take the lead.
You know, you do have confidence that if you keep it at one run, you can, you know, come back and win a game. The issue is Lugo's usage. Like, Lugo pitches in a losing game, and you don't end up winning, he might not be available the next day. And, you know, I think he would do a great job at holding it to one run, but we need somebody else to step up in that role, hold it to a one-run game so we can win a game. Because if we can't pitch Lugo in every situation, if we started doing that, he'd be pitching every night, and he just can't do that.
Well, where are we as far as how often you could use him? I completely understand after two innings the other night, he's not going to pitch the next day. I'm not going to quabble with that. But will you start to be more aggressive in using him and using him on back-to-back, dare I say, 3 days in a row? Because now we got a pennant race. I mean, we got ourselves something legitimate going on. So will you be more aggressive now in using Seth Lugo on back-to-back and even more situations?
We'll be as aggressive as he can handle it. And so, you know, what I mean by that is when we pitch him on any given night, we have no idea, even if he throws 14 pitches, if he's going to be available the next day. So that's a whole another thing is when he pitches that night, it's not like we can say, okay, let's get him out because he's going to be available tomorrow. We really have to wait and see when he plays catch and lean on him for that information. So it is a little tough, but, you know, I think the approach we're going to take is let's win tonight. And then if he's not available, somebody else is going to have to step up the next day.
The manager of the New York Mets, Mickey Callaway, with John Jastrzemski and Evan Roberts right here on The Fan. And Mickey, you're starting pitchers since the All-Star break. They've been absolute money. We know DeGrom's been money since the month of April, but Syndergaard's back to looking like Syndergaard. Wheeler, his last two starts, has been tremendous. Steven Matz has done a much better job, and now you add Marcus Stroman into that mix. So you guys made a change with your pitching coach and with your bullpen coach mid-June, late June. How much credit do you give Phil Regan for these guys turning around?
Well, there's no doubt that Phil and Ricky and Jeremy have done an amazing job. Now, you know, I think that our pitching staff is so talented. They were going to go on a run like this no matter what. But the calming presence that Phil Regan brings is unbelievable. Just being around this guy, the experience, his ability to connect with people is really, really good. And he definitely has done a great job with this pitching staff.
Mickey, you guys go out and add Marcus Stroman. Considering where you were at, and I know you're preaching all this positivity, but how much of a jolt did it give the rest of the clubhouse seeing a guy of that caliber coming in where all of a sudden it's like, holy smokes, we're in this thing? Did the presence of Stroman really give you guys a big-time boost here?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, I think if you look back at teams that add like this, right after you add, you go on a run. The Braves did it. Right when they added Dallas Keuchel, man, the atmosphere there was off the charts, and it seemed like they started winning a ton of games. We've done the same thing, and it wasn't just about adding Stroman, because there was this little period, okay, you add Stroman, but are we going to get rid of somebody? And a couple days later at 4:01, when we didn't get rid of Wheeler or Syndergaard, then you really started to see the energy and the excitement that all these guys had, that we didn't have to tear this thing down. Okay, boys, let's go on a run and let's see if we can do something special. It's been fun.
One thing that I think can help you with this bullpen is having guys go deeper into games. I mean, it's obvious. If you only need three or four or five outs from your bullpen as opposed to 9 or 12, it makes life easier. Looking at Zach Wheeler the other night, was there something you saw in the eighth inning where you said, I don't want him to pitch the ninth inning? Was it knowing you had an off day Thursday, getting guys in? Because at the game last night, I thought, you know what, this guy could finish the job. Was that thought going through your mind with Zach last night?
No, because his pitch count was 100 last night. You know, he came off the little bit of a break during the All-Star break, and at this point, his pitch count isn't 115. It was at 100. He threw 101, so he was done. We couldn't even send him back out if we wanted to, because that's the pitch count that we were comfortable with to keep him healthy and going. So it's not always, you know, just okay. Let's get him out of there because an off day. Sometimes the pitch count comes into play. You know, the other day with Jacob DeGrom, he threw 116 his previous outing. He got us through seven. His pitch count was low. We had a comfortable lead. Let's get him out. Let's hand it to somebody else. That's you know, what we have to do with these pitchers to keep them going.
So
now,
is Zach gonna?
We're about to be in a spot where all gloves are off.
Okay,
and you got to let your horses run, and they're about to.
Oh, see, that's what I love to hear. So you're telling me, because I get it, he's off the injured list. I know from the second start back, he was at, I think it was 88 or 90 pitches, and you took him out after seven innings. I get all that. So are the gloves off of Wheeler, like his next start against the Braves, and he has some success down in there going back down to Georgia. Gloves off, he's at 110,
absolutely.
You let him go?
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to, you know, I like these guys to throw 115 pitches. This is what we've conditioned them for, and they're our horses, and they're our best pitchers, and they're going to carry us.
Mickey, what has gotten into Michael Conforto? I mean, that sweet swing, we were waiting to see it in the first half, and I know he was hitting some home runs, but I've always thought he had, you know, all-star year in and year out type potential, and he's just been in the middle of everything for your team over these last couple of weeks. So what has been a big difference in watching Michael Conforto earlier in the year and watching him here where he's just been red hot?
You know, he's just not missing his pitches. They're making mistakes. You know, there's several reasons why guys can slump, whether it's they're hitting the ball right at somebody hard and they're getting out, they're swinging and missing, not identifying pitches, or it's when – you know what? The pitchers are just executing pitches against them for a 2-week period, and then that makes it tough. But Michael has definitely snapped out of whatever one of those reasons that were happening. Sometimes all three of those happen, and it prolongs that for a couple months or a month. But he's done a great job of righting the ship and getting his swing where he needs it to be, where he's identifying everything. He's right on pitches. Today, you pull one down the line, you take one low and away, and you go to the opposite field. He's covering every pitch, and it's fun to watch. This is the Michael Conforto that he can be full-time, and I think at some point in his career, you're going to see this. You know, this kid had almost less than a year worth of minor league at-bats before he got called up to the big leagues, and they called him up for good reason, to help them do something special in the playoffs, and he did, but he lost out on some development. Right. So he's been, you know, battling back and forth and at the major league level for a couple years. And sooner or later, he's going to really, really, really figure this out. And he's going to be a perennial all-star every year like you're talking about.
You know what? I think there's something else. And I think I'm going to give you – see, I'm about to give you credit, Mickey. I'm about to give you some love for something. I think putting him in front of Alonso helps.
Great point.
He's clearly getting more pitches to hit. So take me through that decision because – now, maybe it's a coincidence, you tell me, but it feels like Michael Conforto is thriving because he is getting more pitches to hit with Pete Alonso protecting him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You know, I think that that's one of the reasons we did that. Okay, let's put Toe in a spot where they're going to have to throw him more hittable pitches. You know, take away one of those factors that I was talking about that puts a guy in a slump where pitchers are just executing pitch after pitch because they're not really worried about what's behind them. So we moved him up in front of Pete, and now they have to throw him a strike when they go 2-0, and he can pound it because they know that Pete and his 37 homers is looming on deck.
Are we going to see now these guys every day? You talked about letting the horses run with the pitchers. How about the position players now? No
off
days.
They're going to play as many games as they can until their legs fall off.
I like that.
I can tell you that.
Now you're speaking my language, Mickey, because that was
right.
What was frustrating, and I'll be honest with you, what was frustrating was with me, it hasn't happened recently, it was with McNeil early in the season where it felt like Jeff McNeil was getting a lot of off days. Now, I'm not in the room. Maybe he's dealing with injuries we don't know about, but I know it was frustrating because the guy's a freaking hitting machine, and when he's out of the lineup, it's tough to see as a Met fan. So knowing now we're going to basically see everybody as long as they're healthy, that's definitely a good thing.
Absolutely. You know, I think that with McNeil, he had struggled getting through baseball seasons for the last 4 years. And early in the season, we knew we had to take care of him a little bit because we know that he's going to make an impact when it really counts. But like you said, the gloves are off. We have plenty of off days in this major league season the rest of the way. And these guys are going to play.
The manager of the New York Mets, Mickey Callaway, with Evan Roberts and John Jastrzemski right here on the Fan. And Mickey, this has got to feel awfully sweet for you. You know what was being written earlier in the year. You know what was being said earlier in the year. There are calls for your head. There are columns in the newspapers. There are a lot of unhappy people. And now you get the last laugh because you're sitting here in August. Your team's playing games that matter. I know it's about the team. I know it's about the New York Mets. But this has got to feel really, really nice for you, does it not?
You know what? I'm not trying to be somebody special. I'm trying to do something special with a group of players, and I've felt that way all along. And I'm just proud that the guys can continue to come to the field every day and accomplish something that can be very good for Queens, for New York City, and you know, all Mets fans out there. So you know, I try not to pay attention to that stuff. Just focus on my job and the players, and let the chips fall where they may.
Why do you think Ahmed Rosario looks like a different player at shortstop? I mean, it wasn't that long ago you guys were flirting with the idea of sticking him in center field, and I didn't blame you.
I asked Mickey about that the last time he was on. I said, is he going to play center field?
No, and I got the question because I felt the same way, man. I watch every inning, and he looked like a subpar defensive shortstop. He doesn't look that way the last few weeks. What the heck happened?
Well, you know what? I would say hard work, but this kid has always worked hard. So the only thing I can think of is when we started talking about center field, he said, no way. I'm going to go show them that I'm a major league shortstop and an above average one. And he has definitely done that. And we've kind of nixed that idea because of the way he's played. So maybe it was just something as simple as us even discussing doing something different with him that motivated him.
You ready for another first guess from me? I'm sure you love that. Yeah, love hearing the criticisms. All right. Wilson Ramos, he's on first base. You don't pinch run for him. You pinch run for him when he's on second base. Now, J.D. Davis hits that ball down the line. If that's ruled fair, I don't know if Wilson Ramos scores. What's the thinking? What am I missing on why, when he's on first, no pinch runner, but when he's on second, all right, I'm going for it?
Well, you know what? There's a lot of different factors when we're sitting there talking about this. You know, do you want to take – once you take Wilson Ramos out of the game, right, and you're winning, and you put Thomas Nito back there – and he gets hit in the head and has a concussion, has to come out of the game, you're going to lose the game because you don't have a catcher. You're going to have Jeff McNeil back there catching. So it's very, very hard, first and foremost, to actually run for a catcher. So you really want to do it unless a base hit is going to score the guy. That's first and foremost. You don't want to put yourself in a bind where you run out of catchers, because no matter how big your lead is, you're probably going to lose the game if you're in that. Second is... in our experience, 98% of the time, a pinch runner doesn't even matter, because especially with no outs, right? So no outs, you get a rally, and I think even that night it wouldn't have mattered much. But you understand that for us to score runs, you're probably going to get three or four hits. Somebody's going to hit a homer. So a lot of the times a pinch runner doesn't matter. Now, there's situations where you're down, you have no other choice, you have to do it, and we're willing to do it. But I think in that scenario, if I remember the whole situation correctly, is we wanted to make sure that before we took out our catcher and put our last catcher in and put us at risk for not having a catcher at all, that there was a good probability of scoring.
Mickey, this weekend against the Washington Nationals, you are going to have a juiced-up ballpark. New York City's all fired up. You're going to be the talk of the town. I think back to that second game in a doubleheader. You've been managing a team now almost 2 years. Was that the most electric you felt, Citi Field?
Yeah, it really was. The fans were amazing, and I'm sure this weekend is going to surpass that. I can't wait for the Nationals to come in here. We got Stroman, Syndergaard, and DeGrom going. It's going to be a battle royale at Citi Field, and I can't wait to see our fans.
No, it is damn exciting. I mean, I think we're all still stunned by what's going on. We're talking to the manager, Mickey Callaway. Is there an update? I never cared about this guy until like the last couple days ago because of Cano's injury, but is there an update on Jed Lowry? Is he doing anything? Does he exist, Mickey?
Yeah, he exists. He's doing baseball activities down in Florida. And, you know, it's really just a day-to-day thing for him. And we're not quite sure when he's going to go out on rehab, but he's definitely doing baseball activities at this point.
This is going to be a question that will make sense eventually, even though at first you may say, why is this moron asking me this? Did you have a good relationship with Asdrubal Cabrera? Was he a good player to manage last year?
I love Cabby. You know, I was around him in Cleveland. He's a top-notch guy. You know, he can hit. I love him. So,
what?
Yeah, I had a great relationship with him. It sounds like it just went in the cards for us to be able to get him.
And, you know, if Brody's allowed to go into your office and throw chairs, you should go into his office and throw a chair and say, how come Cabby isn't on this team right now? Because you know he would have been perfect right now.
Yeah, you know what? I always say this, and I really mean this. I like to focus on the 25 guys that we have in our clubhouse and let everybody else do their job. I think that what we have in our clubhouse is going to get the job done. We're always going to be out there looking for ways to improve, and I know that Brody's on top of everything like that.
Well, Mickey, obviously a shame with Robinson Cano. He finally starts hitting. He finally starts looking like the player we saw with the Yankees and the Seattle Mariners, and he ends up on the injured list. Is there any way you could get this guy back potentially? What is the timetable right now when it comes to Robinson Cano?
Yeah, I have no clue. You know, I don't think anybody knows. For Robbie, it's really just treat him every day and kind of see how he progresses. So we really don't have a timetable. We don't know. Nobody really knows. So we just got to do the best we can to rehab him every single day, and hopefully he does come back.
You've got a lot of options, and we've seen him the last few days. They're not great options, but you have options on filling in for Cano. We've seen Lagares play center field. He is just a mess offensively, but whatever. We've seen Luis Guillerme, and I got to compliment him. He is something defensively. I'll give him credit for that. And you've got Adeni. Right now, what's kind of that plan at that second base or center field option? Because McNeil's like a Swiss Army knife. You could stick him anywhere. But who do you foresee playing most of the time now with Robinson Cano out?
You know what? I think we have to understand who the pitcher is. The other day, we kind of figured that Wheeler was going to get a lot of ground balls, so it was perfect time for Guillorme to be in there. I think we also have to monitor Jeff McNeil. Right field and left field is a little more stressful than second base is for Max. So if he has a great night and goes 3-for-4 like he usually does, you might see him at second base the next day, and that takes some of your options away, and you're going to play Lagares or Altier in center. But other than that, I think we got to look at the pitcher, who's pitching for us, who's pitching for them, and taking care of McNeil first and foremost, and then making that decision there. Because for me, it's about even all around. We just need to know, where do we want that better defense, in center, or do we want it at second base?
Mickey, final one for me. You've been around baseball a long, long time. This has been a very wacky, this has been a very up and down. Just simply put, it's been a very strange season across the board. Is this the weirdest season of baseball you've ever experienced in all your years of being in a dugout, playing, coaching, managing, you name it?
You know what? It's been exciting. That's it's been everything. You get a little bit of everything. I feel like I've managed for 5 years this year and got 5 years worth of experience because we've been through it all. But the one thing I do know is that our group in that clubhouse is a closer knit group right now because of what we've been through. So if we, all things being equal, if we were at the same spot at this moment in the season, I would have rather had this happen to us this year to get to this spot than anything else. Because if you kind of cruise through and then all of a sudden you're at this spot, like the Phillies, right? The Phillies have been riding a high all year, and now all of a sudden they're feeling bad. You know, we've been building this relationship through tough times for a few months, and all of a sudden now we're in the exact same spot they are, and I think we're a better team and a better group of people to be around than they are at this point because of our struggles.
That's interesting. Let me ask, this is the last one from me, the whole scoreboard watching phenomenon, okay? I'm getting crap from my partner over here that I'm keeping an eye on the Braves.
Listen,
like, why,
Mickey,
the hell not?
I just want him to focus on the wild card. Listen, that's all. Start somewhere, listen.
Hold on. Hold
wild card first, then the Braves. That's all.
Mickey, you admit, now I'm a little, this answer, and I don't even know how real this is, but Puma. You know Mike Puma covers the Mets for the Post? You talk to him all the time. Good dude, I like him. He tweeted over the weekend that you admitted you scoreboard watched the Yankees. Now, I don't know why the heck you're doing that. So before we get to the Braves, is that true? Are you sitting there scoreboard watching the Yankees?
No. Obviously, I understand what the scores are every night, because on every field, those scoreboards are out there. No, Mike Puma asked me that at the end of my interview, and I said, no, I really don't. We're focused on our team. And as they were walking away, I said, but I do scoreboard check the Yankees. I was totally kidding.
I just wanted to make sure.
But I love that they tweeted that out and made it a story. That's fantastic. Well, maybe I should start doing more of that
stuff. Yeah, you should. There you go. I'll tell you, honestly, Mickey, for about 10 10 seconds, I was annoyed, and then I thought to myself, I don't actually buy it. Like, I don't actually think you're doing that. But you do.
I could care less what they do.
No, of course, and nor should you. I mean, it doesn't matter. But you do glance up at the other teams in your division, at least, right, just to see what's going on.
You know, it's right in front of you. When you're managing in a game, you know, in between innings, the scores are all sitting there the whole game. So you're always, on top of who's winning, who's losing.
Well, Mickey, things are working out. I'm happy. Met fans are happy. You're happy. Keep it up.
Keep
all
at
right?
it, brother. Keep at it, man.
Thanks,
good
guys.
For you, Mickey.
Yeah, let's have some fun these last couple
let's
months.
Let's hope so.
There you go.
Mickey, take care, guys.
Thank you, man.
Later, Mickey.
Mickey Callaway, the manager of the Red Hot Mets. They completed the sweep against the Miami Marlins a little bit before we came on the air. Steven Matz delivered a hell of a game. Now they have an off day, and they get set for the more difficult part of their schedule, welcoming in the Washington Nationals.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.